Today's podcast is kindly sponsored by Boyne Valley Honey. Boyne Valley Honey is Ireland's favourite honey brand, and one of my daily healthy habits is incorporating Boyne Valley Honey into my daily routine. The health benefits of honey have been used for centuries. Honey acts as a natural remedy for cough and also has natural antimicrobial properties. I add Boyne Valley Squeezy Honey to my porridge every morning. Thank you, Boyne Valley Honey, for supporting this series of my podcast. I hope you enjoy listening today. For today's podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Niamh Lynch, who many of you probably know from Instagram. I love sharing what Niamh shares on Instagram and learn so much from her, and she gives so much of her time. She's a consultant paediatrician in Bonsecours in Cork, and Niamh is going to talk to us today about anxiety in children and adolescents. So, Niamh, firstly, thank you very much for being here today.
You're very welcome.
Can you just explain to us the biology and the science behind anxiety? Like, what causes anxiety?
So I suppose the answer is that stress causes anxiety. And some people have a sort of an internal stress that is just how they're made. And other people are reacting to what's going on around them. And some people have both. So they have high internal anxiety or stress, and then they encounter a stressful situation. And I suppose you don't need to look very far to think of a stressful situation at the moment. So what happens then when your body is reacting to stress? It goes into what we call the fight or flight mode or the freeze mode. So your body releases a lot of adrenaline and cortisol. They're the stress hormones, and they have physical effects on your body. Mm. So what generally happens is that the heart rate will increase. So if you're, we talk about children, so if you have a child, sometimes they might complain that they feel like their heart is racing. It causes blood supply to be diverted away from the gut because digestion is low priority in a stress situation. If you can imagine back to the cave days where we were running away from a lion, you weren't really, your body wasn't interested in digesting what you just eaten. It was interested in getting the hell out of there. So the blood is diverted away from the gut and to the heart so that, and to your muscles so that you can run. And what happens then is that the blood supply is reduced to the gut. So the gut slows down so they can start to complain of pain in their tummy. The other thing that activating your stress system, if you like, can do is it activates a thing called your vestibular system, which is your balance, basically. So a lot of kids who are stressed will say that they feel dizzy. So those would be sort of a few of the symptoms. So tummy pain, racing heart, dizziness. And another thing then is if you have a tendency towards migraine, if you're under stress, then you will have a lot of headaches as well. So they'd be the main symptoms. I don't know if you know of or can think of any other ones, but they'd be the main ones I'd think of.
Mostly what I see as a GP is the tummy pain. That's what I see mostly. And the dizziness, that's an interesting one. Is there a particular like age group? Say we're talking about younger children, adolescents. Is there a difference about what symptoms they might describe or present with, or is it kind of just across the board?
It's usually more tummy pain in the smaller kids. And the older they get, then the more, I suppose, the more aware they are of their body, and the better they are able to express their symptoms. So as they get a little bit older, they might complain of that racing heart feeling, of headaches and of the dizziness. The dizziness kind of comes more over the age of 10.
Yes, I was going to say, I couldn't imagine a small child or toddler saying to me that they felt dizzy.
And if they did, you'd be worried, you know. Now, with all of those symptoms, like if a child is bad enough to end up in the hospital with me with these symptoms, then we have to investigate them medically. And I suppose, you know, it's important to rule out a medical cause. But very often we will investigate what seems like a very complex medical presentation and find nothing on any of the investigations, and then have the conversation that maybe these symptoms are coming from stress and anxiety.
Because as we were saying before we started to record, children might not have the words to describe stress, so they're kind of internalizing it, and then it eventually, when you push something down, it will manifest physically.
Yes. And speaking of that, actually, another thing that I've seen a lot of this past year is tics. So excessive blinking, throat clearing, facial grimacing, twitches, things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, a parent looking at that in their child, you know, if they see that for the first time, they get very alarmed because they think it might be some sort of seizure or something like that. But it's actually a tic, and tics are involuntary movements, but they're certainly exacerbated by, again, the stress system being activated and all of that adrenaline and cortisol zooming around the body.
And it's been a really difficult, you know, 18 months for children. And I have definitely seen that, you know, that tummy pain. And when, you know, you ask children if they're worried about something, you know, or it's just that they're like adjusting going back to school, I think was a big thing for children. And there was this paper from the Irish Medical Journal that was published recently. And that did show a very clear increase in mental health presentations amongst children and adolescents in 2020 compared to 2019, isn't it?
Yeah, a marked increase, really. You know, and that's certainly the experience that all of us paediatricians had on the ground. So it's really nice to have this data now, because every individual hospital had the sense, gosh, you know, we're seeing a lot of, you know, funny presentations with strange symptoms, you know, we can't explain medically. And everybody had that sense, but it's only, you know, data is so powerful. And it was, it's only when everybody got together and pushed their presentations to the ED together that we saw a clear pattern. And more than any other medical condition, children were presenting with symptoms of stress. And a lot of the other stuff fell off the radar completely because we were washing our hands and wearing masks. So the kids with asthma didn't have trouble with their asthma. The kids with tonsillitis didn't have trouble with their tonsillitis. So in general, children were physically healthier during this time, but mentally not so good.
Struggling, and they were describing, I think a lot of them expressed concern, like about just adjusting back to school, adjusting back to having friends again, you know, and having those relationships again. And then as well, they described worry, you know, about safety, about their own personal safety and safety of families. Their own family, and they described as well the older children worry about the academia and the catching up, you know, so it has been a huge strain on children. So, and as well, this paper showed that when children were about to go back to school, that there was particular peaks. So we do know, I think, you know, we can say that there was more anxiety in preparation to going back to school.
Children are creatures of routine. And this past year and a half has completely blown up their routine, and there's great security in routine and knowing that you're going to be in a certain place at a certain time on a certain day. And so that certainty was really pulled away from them in the first lockdown. And I suppose perhaps unfairly, it was felt, as with many other infectious diseases, that the children would be the reservoir for this illness. And so they were sort of a little bit stigmatized from the very beginning. And certainly older children were very aware of that. My children are a little bit older. And when we went out for walks, you know, the older people would sort of nearly jump away from them because they were children. And, you know, it was just, it was very difficult for them, you know, where they should be in a place of being absolutely cherished and supported. They were suddenly treated like they might be carrying some sort of a plague, you know. It was very difficult for them. And then I think what did, so, and then they had a very long time off school, like, you know, school ended pretty much after St. Patrick's weekend, and they did not go back to school until September. And their whole world changed. So, you know, where there was the busy routine and the out and the, you know, driving here, driving there, everything stopped. All of a sudden. And, you know, they probably saw their, many of them saw their parents go through a lot of stress about their jobs. Those who were unfortunate to be in difficult domestic situations probably witnessed things that they mightn't have witnessed otherwise. And the whole thing was just kind of catastrophic for them, really. You know, so then when it came to coming back to school in September, you know, we had the whole talk. I remember this even with my own kids, you know, this doubt, you know, is school really going to stay open? And that uncertainty coupled with, you know, are my friends still going to be my friends? You know, what's my teacher going to be like? All of that kind of stuff. Just it churns into that whole anxiety thing. And then, of course, you know, come Christmas, the whole thing gets shut down again.
Yeah.
So they've lost that faith in the system.
Yeah.
And so I can understand why they would have a kind of a mounting sense of anxiety before school goes back, say, this September. Because they've learned is not to trust that things are going to work out the way that they'll expect. Now, maybe it's a valuable life lesson, you know, but
it's a tough one
for a child to take on. And, you know, they literally had the rug pulled out from under them back in March of 2020.
Yeah.
And things haven't restabilized.
Yeah.
And, you know, that has upset their own little dynamics then as well. Some kids, it hasn't bothered them at all. They've been quite happy.
Yes.
But others have found it extremely stressful.
And what you say there, like that loss of trust, I suppose, with adults to kind of make sure you're okay and, you know, that stability, like that's a hard one that's a hard lesson to learn.
It is a hard
so
one.
So young.
Yeah.
So, and I suppose it is important to say as well that, look, some children and some families and some people did thrive in the kind of extra family time. But, you know, there was an increased presentation. There was increased presentations of mental health problems in 2020 compared to 2019. So we're going to be coming back up now, actually going back to school soon. So if, you know, a parent is listening and they have children at home, I mean, should they talk about going back to school, or should we just say nothing and, you know, just enjoy the rest of the time off and pretend it's not happening? Or, like, what could parents do to kind of support children in kind of going back to this kind of difficult situation again of readjusting all over again?
Well, I hope that things will be a bit better controlled and more people will be vaccinated by the time September comes around. And I would dearly, as a mother, love to stick my head in the sand and not talk about what might go wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, they've had enough pessimism. I'd love to, you know, shower them in optimism. But what we all need is to be realistic.
Realistic optimism, yeah.
So the thing about anxiety and stress is not talking about it makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be sure that as soon, you know yourself, when you go into Dunn's or Tesco, as soon as the first, pretty much before the end of July, they have the back to school posters up and they're selling the uniforms, and for the particularly organised parents, which doesn't include me. But so children are they're like sponges. They're very receptive to advertising. Once they can read, they can understand. So once they start seeing the signs for back to school, they're going to start thinking about back to school. So I'd say the tip for the parents is, once you start seeing the signs for back to school, you need to start talking about back to school and have a dialogue with them. Even if it's just a 5-minute chat saying, you know, how do you feel now about going back to school? And, you know, to sort of be open about the fact that there may be some anxiety and not to dismiss it, just to explore it and sit with it and let them, you know, let them understand that it's okay to be a little bit nervous about the whole thing, because parents are going to be nervous and kids are empaths. They pick up all the signals.
Sure.
So if the parents are getting a bit stressed, you can be sure the kids will be getting a bit stressed as well.
Yeah, they do. They really soak up all of those cues and signals. You know, they, as you say, they're empaths, so they will sense it. And then if it's not verbalized, if the child isn't given the opportunity to say, look, I'm a bit worried, or, you know, I'm, as you say, worried, will my friends still be my friends? I'm worried about the schoolwork. So just give them the opportunity to talk about coming up to it.
Yeah, exactly. Not in a kind of analytical, you know, sit on the couch there and I'll, you know, just keep it in the, bring it into the conversation.
Yeah. As you're just on a walk or something like that. So if a parent is worried, the parent is worried actually about the anxiety or the mental health of their child, what should they do? What can they do?
So I suppose the first thing is, let's go back to the physical symptoms, okay? And let's just say that you go to your GP with your child and your child has physical symptoms and nothing is found. And, you know, if your GP or paediatrician then says, you know, could this be anxiety? Things have improved. So let's say 5 years ago, if I'd asked that question, the parents would have taken some offence. We have gotten better at acknowledging that we're a slightly anxious nation. And, you know, just take it on board. You know, very often some parents' knee-jerk reaction would be to get annoyed at that
mm-hmm.
and say, so you think my child is imagining it?
Mm.
No, we're not saying that. Their symptoms are completely real. They are biological symptoms because yeah. they're having a biological response to the stress.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not saying that they're imagining it. We're not saying that they're making up their symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
But we are saying that it's a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the disorder.
Yeah.
The disorder is that their biology has been upset mm-hmm. by the stress.
Mm.
So for a parent, you know, to be comfortable talking about and mm. understanding why we think maybe your child might be mm. exhibiting physical symptoms of stress.
Mm-hmm.
If you take it beyond that then and you realize that your child is, you know, is stressed mm. and you don't know what to do, then it's really important. Your first step is always to go and talk to your GP, mm-hmm. really. And you can take from there, Dern.
yeah, well, that is important, yeah. In the first instance, speak to your GP. And that's a really nice point you made. Like 5 years ago, if we suggested to somebody that possibly symptoms might be caused by anxiety, I think there has been a change. And I think actually often what I see, you know, in adults actually is people come in and they say, oh, I have, you know, this, and this is probably anxiety. And I'm actually working the other way. I'm saying, well,
yeah,
we should check out the
yeah.
other stuff first,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So we have made progress there.
Mm.
And the initial reaction might be to think, a knee-jerk reaction of, they think I'm making it up, and that's absolutely not it. The symptoms are real, mm. you know. It is a symptom possibly of anxiety. But that's anxiety. But there have been, you know, other flares in mental health problems as well during like lockdown and COVID,
mm.
In particular eating disorders as well, hasn't there been?
Unfortunately, yeah. There's been the two main types of hospital admission for children this past year anyway, have been kind of neurological symptoms, and we investigate them and it's usually due to stress and anxiety, or children with weight loss. And, you know, young children, you know, down as young as 8. And those are the kind of pediatric patients that are in hospital and that mm-hmm. have been in hospital this past year, really. And there has been an explosion in eating disorders, and there are two reasons for that.
Mm.
So the first one is going back to the gut symptoms of anxiety and stress,
okay.
Where the gut kind of slows down.
Mm.
And so the child starts to feel another thing is in the older child, it doesn't manifest as tummy pain. It manifests as nausea.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And they become nauseous and they start to refuse to eat. And then they start to lose weight. And there, I don't know of any teenage girl who isn't happy to lose weight, you know. Mm. And then it becomes sort of embedded, you know. So they don't eat because they're nauseous, then they lose weight. And then, you know,
yeah.
they get down to a certain low BMI and then they don't want to eat anymore.
Mm.
And they're probably a little bit easier to deal with, actually, if it's kind of more a nausea sort of a sensation. But the other reason, and the more prominent, unfortunately, reason is for the child to have a sense of control.
Mm.
It's genuinely not about weight loss. It's about control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're seeing it. And we're seeing it in girls and boys.
Mm.
Much more in boys than we ever used to before.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a significant issue, and it just gives them a sense of control. If I can control what I eat, maybe I can control what goes on around me.
Mm.
And then once they get down below a certain body mass index, their mood changes, and it becomes very hard to bring them back, you know.
Back out.
And that's why they have to go to hospital to help them to eat again, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's maybe almost like what you said at the start, you know, when somebody is feeling anxious, that there's the fight or flight response, but actually some children maybe freeze,
mm.
go into themselves and maybe start to seek within themselves control, kind of almost in that kind of freezing kind of type reaction.
Yeah. It's very sad, really. I mean, it's very tough. Mm. And maybe one thing that will come out of it is that we'll be able to build the services for children with eating disorders, because they needed to be built anyway.
Yeah.
But at the numbers that we have now, obviously they're much higher than they've ever been before.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe one of the things that will come out of the pandemic is a better service for children with eating disorders.
Yes. Yeah. And for mental health services for children in the community and in hospitals.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah. Like it is very difficult. The GP is your first step.
Mm-hmm.
But the next step obviously is referral to the local services, and we know that they've been under resourced for a long time.
Mm.
And hopefully, like I said, as per the eating disorders, hopefully they will get a bit better resourced as a yeah. result of this, because there will be, I think we're only seeing the beginning of the yeah. the anxiety tsunami that's coming.
Yeah.
And there is going to be need to be resources and staff to look after those kids.
Yes, exactly. So actually, Jason, who does sound for this, did say, so what he described actually I thought was really interesting. So he's a 4-year-old son.
Mm.
And he said, you know, like half of his son's life has been COVID-19.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that actually was such an eye-opener for me.
Mm.
And then, you know, he was saying, like, what is the knock-on effect of this going to be long-term? So there is going to be fallout from it, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. Long-term. I think certainly in children, like, you know, I've described them as the canaries in the mine,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the canaries were taken down into the coal mines, and when the levels of CO2 or no, carbon monoxide yeah. got too high, the canaries would die. But they would stop singing first.
Yeah,
and that was
okay,
the clue
yeah, yeah.
that everybody should get out. Okay. And actually they built special little bariatric chambers for them. They would put them for the canaries. Some
oh
of the mines, yeah. So they would revive the canaries.
Wow.
Not always now, but okay. in latter years, the canaries yeah. would be resuscitated and sent down again. Okay. But, you know, the children sort of, they are the canaries in the mine. So they're the ones, that's where you see the fault lines that COVID, not COVID itself, but the response to COVID and
yes.
how we've responded to COVID, that's where the fault lines are. So the people who came under the most pressure, really, you know, leaving employment and people and older people and work aside, the group of people in this country who came under the biggest sort of pressure or were put under the biggest obligation were the young people. So, you know, they've missed out on school and the college students, you have to feel sorry for them as
I
well.
Feel
they,
terrible.
You know,
I mean, when I think of how much I enjoyed like
yeah.
my first
year, it was your best year.
The best
years yeah, yeah.
of my life.
So they've
yeah.
missed that completely. So they've paid a very high price.
They have.
And then, as I was saying, if they're in difficult domestic situations or if their parents have lost their job, you know, they're absorbing all of that. They're absorbing all of that. So that group of people suffered, and then it was the extremes of age, basically. So it was
yeah.
the young and then the very old who were in nursing homes and things like that, you know, who actually got sick.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So like, you know, they have been, you know, we've done something with children that's probably never been done
never.
Before.
Yeah.
You know, that didn't happen in the last big pandemic, which would have been the 1918 flu.
Yeah.
You know, the schools continued.
Yeah.
So this has never been done. So we don't know what's going to happen in the long term. But I think we can safely assume that there is going to be significant mental health issues. And I see it in toddlers. So hopefully it's temporary.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, typically where a 3-year-old would stomp in and demand a sticker.
Yeah.
That 3-year-old now has literally spent half his or her life isolated from other people. And they come in and they're holding on to their...
Stocked
yeah,
and
tight and peeping
yeah.
up behind the mum and... you know, kind of big eyes watching everything, you know, just some of them have, like, I've met children who'd never left home until
yeah.
they came to see me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that adjustment, and that's a developmental stage. Now, there you have developmental windows, you know, so it's not that they missed the window to socialise, if you like,
yeah.
but there has been a delay.
Mm-hmm.
Now a lot of them are back in play school and things like that. So hopefully it'll come right. But there are some children who will be left with a little bit of social kind of anxiety and uncertainty who probably wouldn't have had it before.
Anyway, yeah. And
yeah.
we're seeing that in adults as well. Yeah, that part. Actually, I hadn't actually really thought about that. All the smallies that come into me, they're stuck to their parent.
Yeah.
Whereas before, and I think of working previously, like there'd be just chaos if there
yeah,
was
yeah, all the toys would be everywhere. And, yeah. you know, and like, yeah. I mean, the sad thing is like I've had to get rid of my toys because,
yeah,
you know,
toys, I
have one digger that I'm able to clean.
Yeah.
So they'd come in there, they'd be looking around for the toys and I'd be like, oh, there's no toys. And then their face would fall even further,
yeah.
you know, and I'd be like, I feel so bad. So in the end, what
yeah.
I started to do was go to the toy shop and buy toys and give them toys
yeah.
so that they'd have something, you
yeah.
know, but it's just everything has changed, you
it
know,
has.
And it's just, it's really, I think, like I said, they just went quiet, you know. They stopped
yeah.
singing, they stopped laughing, they stopped, you know, they became very quiet. And almost like that Victorian model of, you know, children should be seen and not heard. They became that child, you
yeah.
know, very quiet, very withdrawn, not really the bubbly, outgoing kids that we were used to having and seeing. So hopefully that will recover.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to take time. And I think it will be tough for many children.
Mm.
Yeah.
But we have to be prepared for it. And we, you know, as, you know, adults, parents, can help to support children by just allowing them, I suppose, to talk about it. And you said as well, you know, talking about anxiety or talking about mental health problems isn't going to give the child anxiety. It helps them to talk about it. Maybe even helps them, like gives them words to talk about it, as opposed to kind of burying it down and then it manifesting as physical symptoms.
100%. So there, like I was saying, like up until about 5 years ago, there was a stigma associated with mental health issues that has, it's still there, but it's much, much better than it was. So even now though, parents do have this belief, you know, well, if I start telling them that they might be anxious, then they might become anxious.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. Yeah. So it's like anything else with your child. You know, there isn't just one big sit down and chat.
Yeah.
It's a continuous
a part of normal
dialogue.
Life.
Yeah, exactly. And talking about it normalizes it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the children who are more likely to manifest things physically are the ones who internalize. They're the quieter kids who tend to put themselves under a bit of pressure, tend to be, you know, maybe but worriers, have a little bit of difficulty falling asleep at night time. Those kids are the ones that generally don't talk about it. They sort of, they keep it all bottled up inside. And that anxiety, I often say to parents, anxiety is like kind of an energy. And it has to come out somewhere.
Yeah.
So it will come out as a physical symptom.
Yeah.
So allowing it just to, like a pressure cooker, you know, you let the steam off every so often. You have to do that with children and anxiety as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, with that information, so we can support children going forward, you know, and listen to them and just hear what they have to say.
Yeah.
And then hopefully, as you say, look, I suppose we have, and that paper from the Irish Medical Journal now, we have data, we have facts, so hopefully that will help to hopefully somehow further resource, you know, the mental health services for children going forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything else that we need to talk about in terms of, is there anything else important that we missed on for today, Niamh?
I don't think so. I think we covered it, did we?
Yeah, I think we covered it well, you know, hopefully.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for being here today, Niamh. It was lovely to have you. Thank you.
Thanks a million.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast, which was kindly sponsored by Boyne Valley Honey. Boyne Valley Honey is Ireland's favourite honey brand, and you can follow them on Instagram at Boyne Valley Honey for inspiration on how to incorporate honey into a part of your daily healthy routine.